Hi, I'm Dr. Mark Rackley, and you're very welcome to the latest episode of my podcast, I Have Issues. In today's podcast, we're going to deal with the issue of denial. Now, denial as an issue can be a real problem. It has the ability to make us anxious and depressed and lead to a very unhappy life that's dishonest and hard to cope with. Having the issue of denial can also lead to other problems as you're struggling to cope with the denied things that you don't want to deal with. So it can lead to other problems like addiction or unhealthy ways of coping with the things that you're finding it very challenging to actually keep repressed and try to ignore. So denial is a serious issue. Now, it might not seem that serious because sometimes we don't really talk about denial. However, as a psychological problem, it is a really tricky one if it takes hold of the person. So in today's podcast, we're going to jump into denial, why people use denial, what denial does in your head psychologically, if that's something that you struggle with. And as ever, this podcast is all about hope. So if denial is something you're dealing with, or if you know somebody who is denying something is going on, then please listen carefully to this podcast, because this could really help you in being able to actually deal with things that currently you're trying to avoid. The famous American author Mark Twain said, "Denial ain't just a river in Egypt." I know, that's a really cheesy joke, huh? But he's right. It's not. It's actually, denial is a real thing. And it's a psychological concept that was first brought about by Anna Freud. So Anna Freud was the daughter of the famous Austrian psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud, who basically was the creator or originator of modern day psychology. So he was a big deal and she was a big deal also. And her father, Sigmund Freud, spoke about denial when he was looking at what was going on in people's minds. And what he said, which is a very serious statement, is unexpressed emotions never die. They are buried alive and will come forth later in uglier ways. And that's a whopper of a statement. So if we break that down, what he's saying is, unexpressed emotions are emotions we don't deal with. They don't die. They're buried alive, so they're always active. And they don't just stay in that state. What they do is that they're going to come back. They're going to make a return in uglier ways. So that was quite a serious warning of what can happen if we're not dealing with our emotions properly, or we're using denial, or we're repressing emotions that we don't want to deal with. And he saw denial as a coping mechanism against anxiety. So because we don't want to deal with something that we feel is stressful or we're worrying about it, so we push it away. And denial is a coping mechanism because we don't want to feel the anxiety of the problem. We don't want to deal with it. So therefore, if we ignore it and push it away, then we don't have to deal with that particular thing. And unfortunately, what that leads to is it's a refusal to acknowledge the severity of unpleasant external realities or internal thoughts and feelings. So when we're using denial, we're not dealing with reality. We create an alternative version of reality, which, of course, isn't real, but serves to keep us a bit more comfortable and less anxious. Now, as Freud said, those unexpressed emotions don't die. They express themselves in uglier ways. So uglier ways are the things we mentioned at the start, that sadly, if we don't deal with things, they can come back and really do a number on our mental health. So no surprises, that can make us anxious, that can make us depressed. It can really wreck our mental health. So if that's the case, then why would somebody use denial if really there's nothing positive to be gained by doing that? And you could say, well, surely then somebody who is using denial, they're just fooling themselves and everyone around them. Well, yeah, obviously they are, but they're doing that for a reason. And that's the thing about denial. Denial serves a purpose. So for the person that's using denial, there's a reason why they're doing that. And as was mentioned earlier, denial serves to protect the person from anxiety about aspects of who they are that they're uncomfortable with, that they find difficult to accept, or they think, well, I don't want to be this version of myself. I don't want to deal with that. Or what can also be the case is there is a fear that other people might reject us or judge us should they know certain parts about us. So therefore, then it gets pushed down and denial is used. So yes, denial is lying. But for the person using it, it is far more preferable to an intolerable truth. So there's comfort in discomfort, there's comfort in keeping the secrets and keeping everything looking the way the person wants it to. So sadly, when somebody is using denial as a coping mechanism, it's really all about the person living a version of themselves that they feel is acceptable, they save face, they save themselves from potential negative judgment and consequences. And so therefore then everybody's okay, it meets the approval of family and society, but it's not real. It's not authentic and the person isn't being true to themselves. So as a coping mechanism, as Freud mentioned, the whole idea of it is to prevent anxiety. Now the reality is it does anything but, it actually enables and maintains anxiety. Because the person who is using denial, they're not zen. They're not super chilled and walking around having absolute freedom of thought without any kind of anxiety. No, the person who's using denial, they tend to be massive worriers, really anxious people, highly stressed, and may even be suffering from things like panic. So put simply, to deny, we must lie. And lying involves keeping secrets. Now, when we work hard to keep secrets, that takes up a lot of energy. We get trapped inside our own heads. The only perspective we get is our own. And that issue then sadly can become bigger and bigger because it's trapped. And we have to do something then to hold it in place. So what a denial do is it sucks the energy out of us. And in fact, it can really be a heavy burden to carry around, which is why it can wreck your mental health. And like we said, lead to anxiety disorders or possibly depression. Now, in order to hold anxiety in place, you have to use all kinds of wacky and creative tactics to do that, to stop people getting suspicious and making sure that nobody's getting close to the truth. And you'll often see that when people are using denial as a coping mechanism is they will tell you a version of events which will basically shut you up and stop you from coming close to the truth. So I hope this doesn't trigger anybody, but things like domestic abuse cases. Oh, well, I walked into the door. Well, OK, but that's not the truth. Or somebody who has a problem with alcohol. Oh, I'm sick. But really, they have a whopper of a hangover or they're in need of a drink. So the person is using alternative reality, alternative conversations and narratives to basically keep you from realizing what's going on. Now, in order again to hold denial in place, a person might over-exaggerate certain behaviors again to keep people ignorant of the truth. So you'll sometimes see this in somebody who maybe is extremely homophobic, toxic masculinity, and that's the guy who's secretly gay. So what you have again is an over-exaggerated version of themselves, which is the stands in total opposition to what's really going on, so that you won't even come close to thinking that that's what's actually happening in that person's life. The other things that denial often needs to keep it in place is avoiding people, places, conversations, out of fear of the denial being exposed and the truth coming out. So the person really has to stay one step ahead all the time to make sure that the denial is intact, which is why it can be so exhausting. And what that can lead to, again, is unhealthy coping mechanisms in order to deal with all that emotional energy. It's so stressful. So the person can end up using drugs or alcohol or unhealthy behaviours in order to cope with the anxiety that denial brings. It can lead to mental health problems like insomnia, and also the person might be having a very difficult time on a day-to-day basis with their mental health. Now, denial can happen, like we just discussed there, on a personal level, where the person is kind of holding it in place and they're carrying it around secretly in their heads. But it's not just on a personal level that denial takes place. Denial can take place on a collective level. So that idea, well, ignorance is bliss, which is nonsense. Ignorance isn't bliss when you're using denial. It's anything but. Like we said earlier, people who are using denial, they're not blissfully living their life. They're tortured. So this is not ignorance is bliss. And just like on a personal level, when denial is used on a collective level, it's used again to keep the status quo, avoid unnecessary change, keep things constant so that the denied reality doesn't surface. So on a collective level, we've often heard that expression, it's the elephant in the room. It's the problem that everybody knows is there, but no one is talking about it and no one is dealing with it. So that might be problems or dynamics in a family, in relationships. It can be on an organizational level, like in a business or in a religion where there's loads of problems going on. There's loads of stuff that is really not very nice, but it's the elephant in the room. Nobody can talk about it. Nobody deals with it. Now, on a collective level, denial becomes a real problem. Because in order to keep the denial intact, you've got to get other people to buy into the denial also. There can be no room for challenge. The reality has got to be buried. The truth cannot be exposed. And that creates a distorted version of reality. So what that does on a collective level, if it's happening in an organization or religion or family, is it facilitates corruption, deception, dishonesty, and outright lies. What that can lead to is that members of the family or members of the organization or the religion experience real stress trying to keep the denial in place. In a family, it might be family secrets from generations that cannot be exposed because it will shame the family or bring embarrassment to the family. So what happens there is the denial is literally passed from generation to generation, and it just creates stress and mental health problems as it ripples through the family. I often hear this with my patients when they speak to me. They'll say, I asked my parents about such and such, and literally the conversation goes dead. And that will tell you where the denial is, which is we're not talking about that and shut up. And so therefore, we want this buried. We want a different version of events that is acceptable. So we're not having this conversation and you're not going to know the truth of what has happened here. And in fact, what the family are hoping is that the secrets die. So the secrets no longer have any power in real life, but that the secrets die with the people who keep the denial in place and keep the silence in place. A great example of collective denial is that old story of the emperor's new clothes. Now, in that story, the emperor was sold these non-existent clothes and everybody bought into it. And the guy was naked. And it took a child to actually say, but he's naked. And that actually broke the denial, let the truth come through, and the shame and embarrassment for everybody then kicked in. Because everybody knew what was actually going on, but they all bought into an alternative reality and denial. Now, coming back to denial on a personal level, when that's used, again, we spoke about that's denying parts of our life or our personality or our history that we see as a problem. So we know the problem is there, but we either don't know how to deal with it or don't want to deal with it. And what can happen when we do that is we create a persona. And the persona comes from the Latin for mask, a mask that was worn by an actor in the theatre back in the day. So a persona is a mask. We act a version of ourselves to hide our true nature and reality. It's not real. It's an alternative version of who we are. And that comes at a great price. Because again, if we're going to keep the mask in place, we have to stay alert to signs that the mask is slipping. We have to get creative to keep people ignorant. And we have to protect ourselves at great cost to show that the mask isn't slipping and the denial stays in place. Again, coming back to my clinical work, I've been doing the job, as I often mention, quite a while. And when I see any new patient, I do an intake with them. I take their history and I find out what's going on for them. And when I speak to some patients, their story and their symptoms will be telling me a particular story. And I'll be questioning that and wondering, what is that? And the patient will often say to me, well, I don't have a problem with drugs or alcohol, or I don't have a problem with whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, well, but your story is telling me something else. And what can often happen is it's not uncommon that those patients don't come back and see me. They drop out of treatment immediately because they're not ready to let the denial slip. They're not ready to face the truth or to challenge those parts of their lives that they're struggling with. And it's not uncommon that I'll often hear from them months later or even years later, and I'll say, I've ended up in rehab because I had a problem with addiction or whatever it might be, and I'm dealing with it now. Or they'll often come back and see me and say, I want to deal with this stuff now, which is great because now they're actually facing the reality. They're facing the problem that needs addressing. Now, as I always say, this podcast is always about hope. And although we identify problems, we're not just identifying problems with no answers. So the same with denial. If you're struggling with denial or you know somebody who's struggling with this, there is hope. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go through seven different areas, seven steps that if you're dealing with denial or you know somebody else who's dealing with denial, that you can actually find a hopeful way forward. Now, as we just mentioned, in the story of the Emperor's New Clothes, it was about exposing the truth. So step number one, the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So in that story of the Emperor's New Clothes, there was no truth. The reality was being denied. And when we start with dealing with denial, it's truth. No more denial, no more alternative versions of reality, truth. Now, that's the most difficult place to start with, because now we're actually facing the problems. We're facing the things that we don't want to deal with. However, you've got to take off those imaginary clothes and face the naked truth. That's where we start. Step number two, be honest with ourselves and own the truth. We cannot take control of our own denial and do this ourselves if we don't actually take it on board ourselves. Now, this can't be another person exposing the truth. It's got to be us. So the first step is being honest with ourselves and owning our personal truth. Only then, when we're honest with ourselves, do we have any chance of being honest with others. So own your truth before somebody else does. That really isn't helpful if somebody else actually takes control of the situation. It really needs to come from us so that we're the one that's actually driving through the reality, not somebody else. Step number three, freedom in acceptance. So now that we're working with the truth and not denying it, it involves working on accepting the reality of a situation. Truth sees things as they really are. Denial sees things as you wish they were. There's freedom in acceptance as we allow ourselves to be free of the secrets and lies that we're holding. It also frees up all that energy, that stress that we've been dealing with as a result of the denial. So denial weighs us down and the truth lightens the load. So accept the new reality and tap into that new energy. Step number four, do the talking. So when we accept something that we previously denied, it's time to challenge the real issue we're avoiding in the first place. So we can examine what we fear about the situation, also thinking about the consequences should we not act and potential ones if we do. So that's about allowing ourselves to express our fears and emotions when analysing this and process what might be holding us back. It might be helpful also to move the truth from outside of our own heads and talk to somebody else. That can be a trusted friend, a therapist, whoever it might be. And what that just does is we can talk through what's on our mind and give ourselves the space to move from denial into acceptance. It also helps to get a different perspective on the situation rather than just being trapped in your own head. Step number 5. What's the worst thing that can happen? So as we've mentioned many times in this podcast, denial is an unhealthy coping mechanism. No psychologist would ever say, you know what's going to really help you here? Start using denial. It's unhealthy. It's terrible. No good comes from it. But it is still a coping mechanism, even if it's unhealthy, because it works to some degree. So it's important to understand, what are we trying to cope with? This can be personal, emotional, or relational. Then we can ask ourselves, what's the real issue here that we're trying to deny? If we were to deal with the real issue, what's the worst thing that can happen? How might we cope in healthy ways? And also consider, is there some irrational beliefs that we've maybe catastrophized in our heads that we think would go wrong should we deal with the problem we're denying? So this can be done privately, we can write them down, or again, we can talk it through with a friend or a therapist or a support group. So get those thoughts out of your head and try and get some rational perspective. Step number 6, get a different healthy coping mechanism. So now you recognize denial is an unhealthy coping mechanism, so let's change it for a healthy one. There's no point removing an unhealthy coping mechanism to replace it with another unhealthy one. That's just not going to be useful. So new healthy coping mechanisms can be, you know, support from people, therapy, support groups, exercise, any behavior that's going to relax your mind, like meditation, yoga, those kinds of things. And that allows the energy to be used for something productive and beneficial for the mind and not keeping that persona in place. So anything like that is a good healthy coping mechanism. Step number 7, the truth will set you free. Denial avoids the truth. Like we said, it supports dishonesty and lying. It can make us sick, and also it can really affect our mental health and physical health too. Now, I fully appreciate that letting go of denial can seem terrifying because the potential consequences might seem enormous, and they might be. The reality is these might be big life-changing things that we're having to cope with here. But it's helpful to think of the implications of keeping the denial in place and the implications of letting it go. Letting it go might seem very risky, as we're moving from something very familiar, like living with denial, to something really unfamiliar and scary, which is living with the truth. So denial can be a complicated issue to deal with, as it not only involves consequences to us, but to other people. Now, deciding to work with the truth on a personal level, some people will support this, hopefully, but some might oppose you as well. And opposition by others to our truth has an agenda. So take time to think this through if we still want, need, or agree with the agenda of other people to keep things denied. The expression, the truth will set you free, is true, but it may involve a freedom that comes at a price as we and others adjust to the reality of a situation. Other people might prefer to keep the denial in place and also prefer the denial to the facts. The truth might set us free, but others might rather stay living with the secret. And that is their choice. If they want to stay living a version that isn't true or living a lie, that is their choice. But it's also our choice to choose freedom and leave denial behind us. And sadly, if others don't support us, then they have an issue with denial too. If we deal with our denial issue and we move into honesty, others who don't want to move with us, well, they might choose to actually leave us behind. And that can be a high price to pay, particularly if that's family, friends, community, religion, organizations who don't want the change and might openly object to and reject it. So it really is important to surround ourselves with support from people who accept our reality and encourage it, and don't encourage denial and lies that are actually going to keep you sick. Now, As Mark Twain said at the beginning, denial ain't just a river in Egypt. But we can drown in denial if we don't save ourselves with the truth. As we just mentioned, other people will prefer our denial, deception and lies. And sadly, what can happen is they'll stand passively on the banks of the river and watch you go under. Don't drown in denial. Save yourself and deal with the issue. I want to finish, as I always do, with a story of a patient that I treated. And this particular patient had a massive problem with denial. And unfortunately, it needed to be dealt with to help him to move forward with his life. So this is a patient in his mid-50s and he was having regular insomnia, panic attacks and anxiety. Quite a private guy, didn't want to see his GP, and his wife suggested that maybe he should go and see a mental health professional to discuss his symptoms. And they contacted myself, so I had an initial consultation with this patient. In the initial consultation, this patient found it hard to make eye contact, gave very short, non-specific answers to questions, and the conversation was really quite stilted. And I could tell I was being kept very much at arm's length from the patient, which is fine because that can happen and you very much work with where the patient is at. And we spoke about the current symptoms of anxiety and insomnia, and this patient reported that they found it very hard to sleep at night because their mind was very active and was going over things which were keeping him awake because he was worrying about them. And as we do as psychologists, we ask if anything has changed recently or if there's been anything that they think might be causing this. And this patient said no. But what he did disclose was he was struggling with some life decisions that were made a long time ago that were now resurfacing and causing him anxiety. And he didn't want to discuss that because he said he wasn't ready to do so yet. So I left it up to the patient off the back of that first appointment. I said, if you'd like to come back and see me, I'm happy to do so. I wasn't sure because when patients are quite cautious, they're nervous, they may not be ready to come back and have a conversation with you, particularly if they're dealing with something big that they're denying. But this patient did come back. And in the next appointment, they felt a bit more relaxed. And again, I always ask my patients how they felt the initial consultation went. And he reported that he felt very anxious being in the office, but there was also a sense of relief that he was talking to somebody about what was happening in his head. So a bit of a mixture of positive and negative feedback there. And he agreed to say a bit more in the second appointment about what was keeping him awake at night. So this patient told a story of when he was a teenager, he'd met a girl and they had started a relationship. As a consequence of that, this girl fell pregnant and her parents were not supportive about the pregnancy. He also told his parents and they did not want him to continue in this relationship. They did not want him to marry this girl because they did not feel that this girl was good enough for him. And her parents agreed that she would be sent away to live with relatives. The baby would be born. She'd be away from the community. She'd be away from everything that's familiar to her. And that baby would be adopted. And it was either that way or she would be disowned and she would be on her own. So this poor girl really didn't have a choice around what was going to happen to her. Now, his parents were delighted with this decision as it meant the relationship would end and the baby and the mother would be out of their lives. He said that both parents were strongly religious and were deeply ashamed of the reproach that this situation would bring on the family and the community. So to save face and manage shame, that relationship had to end and that baby had to be removed from their lives. At the time, again, because he was a younger version of himself, he felt he didn't have a choice in what was happening because, again, he was also threatened with disownment. And as he told this story, I mean, my heart was breaking for this poor guy. He was very emotional and you could tell he hadn't really connected with this part of his life for a very long time. So in the following appointment, we came back to the story and He also mentioned a little bit more that he was also sent away to live with relatives in another country to remove him from the community and again save face from the family. He didn't want to do this, but really felt he didn't have a choice because he was at that young stage of his life with limited resources. So he moved abroad. He stayed away for many years. He built a new life in another country and he began to get busy with his life and his life moved forward. And he recalled that he would sometimes dream or think about the baby that was adopted and he'd felt deeply ashamed and regret about what had happened. And what he would do in order to cope with that, he would quickly bury the thought and deny it any attention. And he also mentioned that if he ever spoke to his parents, they would never, ever bring this conversation up again because they were deeply denying and burying it. And what that created was in time, he had a lot of anger towards his parents about the decision that they made, how they denied the reality of the whole situation, and how that then the ripple effect of that changed his life by him being sent away. And we spoke a bit more about how he coped with that. And he said, well, I became a workaholic. I just threw myself into a career. My career, my work kept me busy. He got married then. And as the story unfolded, when he got married, he and his wife wanted to have children, but had dreadful problems conceiving. So as a result, they were childless. And this brought the situation from his past into light again, but he kept burying it and he didn't tell his wife about the baby that was adopted. He really kept that very secret from her. And he spoke about when they were trying to conceive and couldn't, his anxiety was bad. He struggled to sleep, but again, he threw himself into a career to keep himself distracted and keep the denial in place. Now, as we got into the story even more and into the present day, he told me that he'd recently received an email from a person claiming to be his son, which completely floored him. He couldn't understand how that could happen, how that baby from all that time ago had found him. And of course, this threw his life into a complete spin. And the denial became impossible to sustain any longer. And he really didn't know what to do. So that's when the insomnia, the anxiety and the worry really, really ramped up. And of course, he was holding all this information to himself. He was afraid to tell his wife and how she might respond to that. And he didn't respond to the email because, again, he was afraid of what might happen. So in the following appointments, we spoke a lot about how the denial was in place for so long and how his parents had facilitated that. And we also spoke about how his current denial was being challenged now with the reality of what was going on as a result of this email. And he was really having to decide, well, what do I do here? Do I keep the denial in place or do I actually deal with this reality? And that was a massive challenge for him because he was afraid. He was afraid of the consequences. He wasn't a teenager anymore. He was a grown man with his own family, his own wife. But still, he was scared because of what that might mean for his current life. Very bravely, he decided to tell his wife about the email. That was a massive step because now we're shattering the denial and we're dealing with the reality. And he reported how he cried when he told her, and fortunately, she was supportive of what she heard. And, you know, his relief was palpable. You could actually physically see it in him that just being able to offload that and tell his wife about this story was a massive, massive weight off his shoulder. And he spoke to her about the email and whether he should reply or not, and she encouraged him to do so and was supportive. So now the denial was being shattered. It was literally falling apart. But again, it was still a massive challenge for him because now he was unsure about what was going to happen next. So he spent a lot of time thinking about his reply and finally sent the email. Now, he didn't say much because he was still a bit nervous that this was even true and whether this was actually his son from all of these years. But he got another reply. And the son replied and told them he'd hired a private investigator and had been searching for years, as is often the case with these situations, for his biological father. The son told him the story in the email that he'd been adopted. His adopted parents were very nice to him, but they told him from a young age that he was adopted. And When he was old enough, he started searching, and that led to many dead ends, but eventually he had found him. Now, when he told me this story in the appointment, my goodness, I mean, this man was, it was taking a lot to hold all this together. As you can imagine, there was huge amounts of processing and emotion and feeling coming to terms with all of this. But again, his sense of relief was enormous because now he was finally dealing with the truth and not having to battle the denial anymore. Now, when we finally finished treatment, his insomnia had improved. He was far less anxious. He decided not to tell his parents about what was going on because he didn't want to deal with their reaction. And, you know, that was the right call for him. He was in touch with his son and was planning on meeting up with him at some point as they were now living in different countries. And in the final appointment when we were doing his discharge, he spoke about how his denial had been there for so long about his past. And at times, the truth of this current reality was almost unreal. It was a lot for him to get his head around and he was slowly adjusting to it. But he was excited. He was excited about the possibilities that lay ahead. And the truth was setting him free. He was no longer drowning in denial, but had saved himself as he swam to the banks of acceptance. If anything has triggered you from this podcast, if there's been part of it that you feel that's me, please make sure that you get some help. So if you need to speak to, like we mentioned earlier, your family, your friends, a mental health professional, somebody you trust, then please do that. The price is very high to your mental health if you don't deal with denial. Now, in the next podcast, we are going to talk about something completely different. So I am very fortunate to have as my guest in the next podcast, Professor Colin O'Gara. So Colin, a fellow Irishman like myself, but he lives in Dublin. I'm in London. He's a consultant psychiatrist, has been so for over 20 years. And Colin is head of the addiction services at the St. John of God Hospital in Dublin, Ireland, which is a very well-known hospital in Dublin. And Colin and I are going to talk about the issue of gambling. So Colin's written a book called Gambling Addiction in Ireland. He's a real font of knowledge and wisdom on this issue of gambling. So if you have an issue with gambling or you know somebody who has an issue with gambling, please do tune into the next episode of I Have Issues, where Colin and I are going to be talking in depth about the issue of gambling, why people might end up with that issue, and as ever, what you can do to actually get that issue sorted if that's a problem for you. As ever, if you feel this podcast is helpful, please share it, please subscribe, follow me on social media. I talk about loads of other things there. Don't keep information to yourself. If you think it could help somebody else, please do share it out to people you think might benefit from it. And as ever, thank you so much for listening.